Welcome to Not Home Alone, a podcast from the family ministry at St. Albans Episcopal Church in Waco, Texas. I'm your host, Stephanie Drum, and I'm the minister to children, youth, and families here at St. Albans. My co-hosts for this series will be our two clergy, Aaron Zimmerman and Neil McGowan. In this series on parenting, we're looking at the love and logic technique, which helps you understand various skills you can use to foster security, independence, and love in your children. Well, welcome to Not Home Alone, which is a new podcast about life for today's families, coming to you from St. Albans Episcopal Church in our family ministry in Waco, Texas. I am your host, Stephanie Drum, and I am the minister to children, youth, and families here at St. Albans. And my co-hosts for this series are our two clergy, who are Aaron Zimmerman and Neil McGowan.
Hi, Stephanie.
What's up?
What's up? I'm so glad that we're doing this, finally. I know that we've had a lot of parents kind of reach out and talk about what life has been like right now, especially for the last 6 months. Everybody's at home with their children, and I can only imagine it is quite the situation. So not only are we starting this podcast, but we're starting a specific series in the podcast. And this first series is going to be a series on parenting. And so we're going to be looking at how parents can foster security and independence and love and caring in their children through the skills and techniques through what's known as love and logic. If you're familiar with love and logic, it's a parenting sort of technique. Aaron, can you kind of explain for everybody why we chose the name Not Home Alone? Besides the fact that it's an excellent Christmas movie.
Yeah, we wanted really just to pay tribute to Macaulay Culkin, Joe Pesci, and the entire standout cast, which has an incredible scene of grace and forgiveness in the church, like on Christmas Eve with that old man and young Mr. Culkin. For listeners that are scared right now, that is what it sounds like when Neil impersonates the soundtrack of Home Alone. But the name came from actually a conversation that three of us had when we were trying to come up with a catchy name. And we talked about this prayer in the prayer book. So the Book of Common Prayer has all these great prayers in the back, and one of them is for families. And one of the things that the prayer emphasizes is that the reason for family is that we would not be alone. And right now, especially when we are socially distanced and most of us are not getting to interact with the people we know and love, or at least not as frequently as we used to, and it's just a really hard time. People are feeling alone. People are feeling disconnected. And so the emphasis that we wanted to strike was this idea that God is with us in our homes. Jesus Christ obviously visited homes. It was a huge part of his ministry. And so as we talk about this, this is definitely, you know, we're coming from the principles that we talk about could be applied by anybody, but definitely coming from a Christian perspective, the idea that Christ was born into a family. Like, he didn't just, you know, there's plenty of religious systems where people just pop up out of nowhere and the religious leader has no real family connection. But Jesus was born into a family. Mary got mad at him sometimes. She thought he was kind of nuts when he went through his late 20s, early 30s. You know, there's just a lot of stuff going on. And that, so God created families. God puts us in families. And then in the second person of the Trinity, God incarnate had an actual family. So that's the kind of idea. The prayer begins, Almighty God, our Heavenly Father, who settest the solitary in families, we commend to thy continual care the homes in which thy people dwell. Yeah. And then there's a lot of other good stuff in there. But it comes from Psalm 68, which calls God a father to the fatherless, a defender of widows, and then says in verse 6 of Psalm 68, God sets the lonely in families. And so we're going to cover all kinds of topics in this podcast. This first series is on parenting. We'll probably do something on marriage. We'll do something for dealing with aging parents or loved ones if you're a caregiver. as well as content hopefully on what does family look like for people who are not married, blended families, so much stuff to talk about.
All kinds of situations that people are in. And whenever we have our family ministry, it's not just for people with young children. So,
exactly.
You know, I think exactly. And I really love, you know, Psalm 68 that you read. So that is a big basis for this podcast itself. So I guess we can kind of just jump in to Love and Logic. If you're not familiar with Love and Logic, we'll be really talking a little bit about the main book itself, but I'm really going to be discussing the Love and Logic training. And so if you're, there's a book called Parenting with Love and Logic by Foster Kline and Jim Fay. And that is a great book to read if anybody is interested on this sort of parenting technique. But for the purposes of this podcast, we're going to be looking at the 9 skills that they give to parents to kind of practice every day with their children. And so I'm going to give you a little bit of an intro into Love and Logic, but we're also going to look at that first technique or that first skill, really, that parents can implement. And really what they say is, you know, a lot of these things, you don't have to do all 9 all at the same time. If you want to just practice one, then just practice one, you know, practice one at a time. Pick one that you really think that you can latch on to and go with that for now if some things are overwhelming, you know?
Yeah, and I think also it's important for parents to realize that you will not do it perfectly.
Absolutely,
but I know, you know, Jim Gaffigan has this line. It says, what is it like to have what is it like to have 4 children? He says, imagine you're drowning and somebody throws you a baby.
Yeah, exactly.
And, so a lot of people are drowning in parenting. Right? So Love and Logic, it's a great way to think about parenting. A lot of people, we just fall into our parenting styles because it's what we grew up with, and we never really thought about having a philosophy or what are we trying to do in parenting or what kind of guiding principles we have. And so we just are sort of making it up as we go, and it was sort of doing okay. And then the pandemic hit and the wheels have completely fallen off. And it's like
– like stuck in a cage with monkeys.
Oh,
that's
man.
Right. That's right. And so, yeah, I just – I mean, I think your point is great, Stephanie. Like, listen to this episode. Take one thing. Try to do that. Also realize you won't maybe do it great. It is practice, and you will mess it up. And part of that actually is how we parent, is showing kids how we, if we do fail in our parenting, if we do lose our temper or we are inconsistent or whatever, you can, depending on the age of your kids, you can have a conversation about that. And that's something else to learn from. But anyways, we also get to talk about parenting styles?
Oh, yes. Because there are different parenting styles. I'm not sure if you know this. We're not going to put our parents on blast necessarily in this episode, but we might put
free
our
therapy
parents on blast.
I want to talk about my parents.
Right? We can definitely talk about parents, but if my mom is listening, I love you. And but yeah, so there's actually, before we get to the parenting styles, let me kind of give the 2 sort of guidelines that Love and Logic is really based on. There's really 2 big sort of overarching principles that this entire system is based on. And the first is this, that you set firm and loving limits through using sort of enforceable statements without showing anger, without lecturing, without threats, or repeat warning. So that's the first sort of like banner principle, is that you set those firm and loving limits. And then the second is that when a child causes a problem, which, surprise, that will happen, the adult will lovingly hand back the problem to the child.
Yeah.
And so those are kind of the 2 overarching things that those will probably make more sense the more that we talk. But those boundaries that we're going to set up with the child, as well as handing the problems back to them, are going to be key ideas that we talk about.
Right. And I think, you know, oh, go ahead, Neil.
It's really a philosophy of letting your children learn from the consequences of their actions.
Absolutely.
And not from arbitrary punishments that have no connection to the thing they did wrong.
Yeah, and they, one of the things they talk about is in the book is doing this when the cost is low. So having your children experience the consequences of their actions when they fail to eat their dinner and they experience hunger, that's a relatively low cost.
Right.
As they age, the costs get higher. You know, failing to make sure that you study for an important exam could have a significant impact on your grade for the class and then whether you get into whatever college, or failing to make sure you're sober enough to drive, obviously very high cost. And
and
I think the idea is at some point your child will experience the consequences of their actions. If the
no matter what, he or she will die.
You know,
we'll all experience the consequences of our actions.
At some point, they will start experiencing the consequences of your actions. Do you want the first time for that to happen to be after they've left your household? Because if then they will not really maybe have the wherewithal, it'll be a very rude awakening. So yeah, that, and I think that the loving, firm loving limits using enforceable statements without showing anger, that there was a story that is in the book about one of the authors of the book sitting at an airport gate, and there was a mother who had a toddler who was just running around bothering people, making noise, basically just trying to cause as much trouble as possible while she was talking to the gate agent. And she kept saying things like, "Dwight, get back over here. Dwight, stop that right now." Like an angry tone, which was understandable, but the kid did not comply or pay attention to her at all. And finally, the kid runs over to parenting expert Jim Fay and is kind of messing with him. And Jim says to the kid, "What do you think is going to happen, you know, if you don't do what your mom says?" And the kid looks at Jim Fay and says, "Nothing." So he obviously knew that these
were not the system already.
The angering, the lecturing and threats and repeat warnings don't work because the kid knew that there were no consequences. There were the statements. Maybe they were enforceable, but they were never enforced. So, right. And no consequences came to the child for his actions. So, the idea. I'm excited to talk about this, and I'm really sorry. I'm taking up too much time.
No, that's great. No, that's a good story. I think that's a good example that I think everybody can relate to a little bit because, I mean, even as an adult, I kind of understand that sort of idea of, oh, like what? So what if? What if I do? Like, what's going to happen? You know, like children need to learn that pretty early on when they're kind of in a structured and safe environment. And so,
right.
In an environment that's loving. Too,
absolutely. Yes.
Where they have freedom to make mistakes and failure.
Right.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the things too, is you think maybe that you are being kind or, I don't know, gracious or flexible or something by allowing your child to act out in ways and never experience consequences. But it actually kind of robs the child of dignity.
Yeah.
Because you're setting the child up for a life in which he or she has not been taught to think about how their actions affect themselves, affect others. It's profoundly kind of diminishing in a sense.
Absolutely.
So anyways, yeah. Oh, go ahead, Stephanie.
No, I think that's right on. And so love and logic really, if you think of kind of like these axis points, like a graph, we think of a parent or an adult having both love and power in this relationship. And so they really emphasize that adults who are both viewed as loving and powerful at the same time have the best sorts of relationships with their children or with a child. So imagine, I mean, because children need those sorts of boundaries and understanding where the limits are. And so I think that's what you're doing whenever, like what you were just saying, Aaron, it's a way of giving them a sort of dignity because you're showing them where the limits are in their world.
Yeah.
And
There's a story of a kid in the book of a kid eating change. Not half dollars, but pennies, nickels, and dimes were like fair game. And you know, I've seen parents who don't kind of embrace their parental power. And power is a word that gets so misused. And we're not talking about abuse. We're not talking about being manipulative. We're not talking about, again, robbing children of their dignity. But as a parent, you have power. One of the Love and Logic sayings
is...
You just have it. Yeah, if kids were meant to run the house, God would have made them bigger. You know, like they are physically smaller. Their brains are not fully developed. They don't have a prefrontal cortex. They don't make good decisions. They're impulsive. And you, as an adult, have the power because you are bigger, stronger. You understand what happens when you put your finger in a socket. You understand what happens if you eat a roll of pennies. And so, you know, using your power.
No, I'm actually curious what does happen if you eat a roll of pennies.
You're giving Neil ideas.
this podcast just went off the rails.
Took a turn. Okay.
So I've seen parents maybe because they had themselves a parent that was maybe overbearing and maybe all power and no love.
Right.
It's actually, and so they kind of go the other way. But I think if there's no loving power and the parent doesn't embrace his or her parental authority in a loving and thoughtful way, you actually do a huge disservice to the kid because you may think you're being nice, but you're just kind of throwing the kid to the wolves and saying, good luck, figure it out.
Yeah.
Life's tough.
And they need you to be powerful. Like, that's because you're supposed to be their safe person, you know? You're the one who's leading them. You're the one who's guiding them. And they're looking to you whether you want them to or not. So, so actually, let's kind of go back to what you were saying at the beginning, Aaron, about parenting styles, because I think that kind of leads into it a little bit. And so... one thing that you just said about parenting with all power, maybe, is what they call the drill sergeant technique, or the drill the
Captain
drill sergeant
Von Trapp.
Yeah, exactly.
From the Sound of Music.
And so this is the parent, as you can, imagine from the name, is the drill sergeant. You know, they're the ones kind of commanding everything and telling you what to do, with no sort of give and take. There's no back and forth happening there with the child. And the unintentional message maybe that is being sent there is that the child is unable to think for themselves. And now we may say what you just said, I agree with, is that, you know, sometimes they really can't because they're not developed yet. But the goal is to help them to think for themselves. And this parenting technique does not foster independence because you're just saying, do this, do that. And I'm not going to teach you how to do this or do that so that you can do it yourself in the future.
Yeah. There's a quote from Maria Montessori, the founder of the Montessori method, where she says to do something for a child that the child can do for themselves is to show the child the profoundest disrespect.
Exactly.
I think, yeah, so the drill sergeant has good intentions. You know, it's 20 degrees outside, and it's good to put on a coat so you don't get sick and all that. So it's good to start the day with a healthy breakfast. It's good, and it's good to do your chores. And so the drill sergeant, though, will just bark these orders, and you may get compliance. You know, each child is different, and every family often has, like, a child that is more or less compliant and one that's more or less defiant and sort of anywhere along that spectrum. So it's a method that works kind of. Again, for some kids, for other kids, it'll just produce a ton of rebellion. But what it doesn't develop is close relationship, and it doesn't teach the child to be able to make decisions for themselves.
Right.
It's a false view of reality, too, because when the child leaves the house and there are no external rules being shouted at them, they realize, well, I can do what I want, because they've always thought that the only problem comes when the authority tells you what to do.
Absolutely.
What
you don't
not
want
to do.
Yeah, you don't
they
want
never
somebody...
face consequences.
Exactly.
I do think
if to become dependent on somebody always telling them do this or do that. You need to be able to make your own decisions in that way. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think, you know, we are three people with Masters of Divinity degrees, which I think is the loftiest degree title of all time.
It's extremely lofty.
Two Episcopalians and a Baptist seminary represented here. And so we know some stuff about Jesus. And one of the things that I think is really interesting about Jesus is that folks often ask him to be a drill sergeant in their lives. Mm-hmm. And you see that in the Gospels where they come and say, Jesus, I've got this problem. You know, would you tell us what to do? Tell me what to do. In this situation, should I do A or B? And Jesus always sort of dodges and puts it back in their lap. And he says, and he always answers their question with a question. And so I think that's a good model for the love and logic parent sometimes, and we'll get to that later, but kind of asking kids questions as opposed to telling them what to do, giving them choices, and the choices get more complex as they get older. But anyways, that's something I think just to bring the Jesus part in. You know,
absolutely. I mean, I think there is a lot of that. I think of even in the Old Testament when the Israelites asked for a new law after Moses came down off the mountain.
Preach it.
Yeah, I mean, we're always kind of looking for that, but we're always looking for like those rules a little bit. Mm-hmm. And the drill sergeant parent kind of errs too much on that side of really not allowing their children to grow into their own independence and their own responsibility. Mm-hmm. So the next parent, as you can maybe guess, is the helicopter parent. And this parent is fairly well known, I think, in culture maybe. But this is the parent who's always hovering and is ready to swoop in at any moment when their child experiences something that may be uncomfortable or there's a problem or they get hurt in some ways. And while, I mean, we should help our children if they need it, but if they need it, right?
Yeah.
This is, and so the unintentional message that is sent by this parent is that you are fragile and you can't make it without me.
Yeah.
And so that's probably not intended, like I said, but that is ultimately at the end of the day, when these kids get older, that message that is sent.
Yeah. The helicopter parent will allow the child to make decisions, but prevents any negative consequences.
That's right.
Right.
So what this looks like at college, the parent will allow the child to go to college. The parent will allow the child to get a dorm room with their best friends. The parent will allow the child to have access to a credit card. And then when the grades drop, the parent is on the phone with the professor saying, I can't believe you gave this kid a D.
Right.
And so the parent is preventing the negative consequences. So it allows decisions.
They're just delaying it.
Well, yeah. So that's the truth. Like ultimately the chickens will come home to roost. So
that's right.
Sure,
but
will.
There's like a sub, but you know, drill sergeant parents, they don't even allow decisions. So drill sergeant child has no decisions, just must comply with the orders. The helicopter parent allows decisions, but prevents any negative consequences from actually happening. And there's, another kind of parent that I've read about recently, and it's not talked about in this book, it's kind of like a subcategory or maybe an upping the ante on the helicopter parent, is the lawnmower parent.
Oh.
I like to think of a cub cadet, little riding mower.
These aren't parents who make their kids mow the lawn.
No, I wish they were. These are parents that go before their child mowing down any obstacle in their path.
Oh,
so
that would have been
like
nice.
the helicopter parent. Yeah, I know. The helicopter parent comes in to rescue after the fact.
Right.
Like, oh, you've gotten your third DUI. I've got a lawyer friend. I can do, you know, it's, you know, all that kind of stuff. That the lawnmower parent prevents, like just kind of goes in front of the path and just removes all the obstacles before they even happen. And so the child, it doesn't ever have to experience even that there might be suffering, difficulty, obstacles, all that sort
of
stuff.
Wow, that's an interesting one. I think that's similarly harmful.
Yeah, and you get why it would be attractive to a parent, because who wants their child to suffer? And, you know, one of the things about love and logic, and we'll probably repeat on this theme a good bit, is that it can sort of feel quote unquote mean. It's not mean, but it goes against your natural instinct sometimes to allow your child to experience the negative consequences of their own actions, because experiencing negative consequences is suffering, and we think that we have to prevent suffering in our children at all costs, which is actually not true. Like, right. You are there to empathize, to comfort, to love, to care, but you can't prevent all suffering. So, and actually, if the child never learns that there are negative consequences again, that's going to lead to the greatest suffering of all.
Right.
And sometimes suffering is the most instructive way.
Absolutely.
To learn things, like the lessons that you can learn from suffering from consequences, you do not quickly forget.
Absolutely.
Like wearing jams.
As an aside to what you just said, Aaron, I want to say that as a general principle, if you want to parent your child differently than the way that you were raised, if you're wanting to parent your child in a more healthy way than the way that you were brought up yourself, I want to say that this technique may feel more uncomfortable than you're used to. If you were raised in a way that was not very healthy, then some of this is not going to come naturally, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Can I just say, though, as a parent with a toddler, none of it feels like it comes very naturally anyway.
That is very true.
And so you just have to, like...
Yeah.
Own that you're learning, and that you can improve, and that it's not too late.
It's absolutely not too late.
You know, shout out to my buddy Andrew Dousman, who always told me in parenting, every year is your rookie year.
Yeah. That's the truth.
Because it changes.
Yep. And so, and for our listeners, you know, I have a two teenagers and a preteen in my house. Neil is parenting a toddler. Stephanie is single, but is the minister and has many illegitimate children. I'm just kidding. Stephanie has none. I don't impugn you in any way. But you are a minister to children. You are kind of a mentor and aunt to many kids. And so we're all coming at this from different perspectives. And just to say that none of us have it perfectly figured out. We are not experts. We are people that have been doing this for a long time, and someone's doing it well, maybe not so well, but absolutely. So we're in the same boat with you guys, and to own the fact, as Stephanie said, like, some of this will often feel like my gut instinct is to say yes to the child. What do you mean I can't do that? Or like, it just, it goes against maybe how you would normally act. So yeah, we're in the boat with you, listener.
Absolutely. Thank you. Yes. Those are all good words. Real quick, The maybe lesser known parenting style that I wanted to mention is the laissez-faire parent.
Free range.
Yeah, free range kids, which, as Aaron mentioned earlier, you know, if children were supposed to be in charge, they would have been born bigger.
Smarter.
Yeah, and smarter. And so this comes from the idea that children have the ability to kind of naturally govern themselves, which I don't know if you've ever met children, but...
So I have. Thanks, Jean-Jacques Rousseau, for this idea. And it generally, like, again, it sounds good and sounds kind of enlightened. And there is, I will say, a good kind of free-range parenting that's out there, which is actually, like, allow kids to, like, have good, fun, unstructured time out in the woods and playing in the creek or whatever it is, and learning how, when they scrape their knee, to get up, rub some dirt on it, and keep playing.
Right.
But what we're talking about here, Stephanie, is, like, basically parents who've checked out. It's like Don Draper, basically, or the hippie version of Don Draper, where like you basically are just letting either the TV raise your kids or letting the Xbox raise your kids, and just kind of let it, like, no consequences, no bedtimes, don't have to eat your vegetables, like, just they'll figure it out. And it ends disastrously, and kids feel very unsafe deep down. And like, why didn't you help me get through life? Why didn't you help me understand some of the difficulties that would come? Why didn't you help prepare me for all these different situations I would face in life?
Yeah.
The children need to know who's in charge.
Yeah.
And that can be something deeply comforting about having a loving authority figure. And to just completely remove that is unsettling.
Yeah, absolutely. So the parenting technique or the parenting style that Love and Logic really advocates for is the consultant parent. And this is the parent that's kind of
unpaid consultant,
the unpaid consultant paid in jewels in your crown. I don't, I'm just kidding. but yeah, it's kind of this idea of, coming alongside your child and, you know, you are there for them in the ways that you need to be, and they're able to kind of consult you, or you are able to consult them for the things that they need, and you show them where those sorts of boundaries are.
And yeah, and can I give an example of those parenting styles? So let's say a kid has a test coming up in a class that she has been struggling with. And the kid comes in the kitchen and says to mom or dad, "I've got this big test coming up. I'm kind of worried about it." The drill sergeant parent is going to say, "You need to start studying an hour a night. No TV until you're done studying." Like, you know, just starts commanding and barking orders. The helicopter parent will listen sympathetically, say, that's really hard. Well, I hope you, you know, we'll make sure you study, but not a lot of follow up. And then when the kid doesn't study and then brings home a D or an F or whatever, then is on the phone with the parent, with the teacher, trying to negotiate a higher grade. Again, teaching the child that like, you can do whatever you want and I'll save you.
Right.
And then the laissez-faire parent is like, the kid wants to talk to somebody about the test and they're not available, not even there. The consultant parent, when the child comes in and says, "I've got this test I'm really worried about," the consultant parent doesn't respond right away, sort of thinks about it. Huh, that's interesting. What do you want to do to get ready for that test?
Yeah.
And asks the question and puts it back there. And then if the kid says, for example, "I don't know," or maybe they name some things and you say, "Oh, that sounds like a good idea. Let me know how that goes. If you need any help, like, I'll be in the living room."
Right.
Sometimes you can then say, if the kid comes back and is like even more frustrated, this is like a quote that has saved my life many times in parenting. "Would you like to hear about what some other kids have done in a similar situation?"
That's a good one.
Because I know how to study. I know about index cards, and I know about quizzing myself, and I know about making outlines to study, and I know how to study, and I could tell them to do it. But if I tell them to do it, again, I'm robbing them of the dignity, and I'm robbing them of the agency, and I'm just telling them, "You don't know anything and I know everything." And so if I say, "Would you like to hear what some other kids have done in a similar situation?" they get to think about it. Do I want to? And then as soon as they are given the power to make a choice, they feel empowered, they feel seen, they feel like they're involved, and you guys are going to work on this problem together, as opposed to you're just going to tell me what to do. There's nothing to fight against.
Right.
The sense of accomplishment, if that child does well on the test, they can really own it, that I was the one who learned how to study, I worked hard, like they had the agency, and it wasn't just mom or dad forcing me, riding me, you know, to make me get this grade.
Right.
You don't want your kid. So another good thing to do is watch The Breakfast Club. So Emilio Estevez's dad, total drill sergeant. It's amazing how much you see this all over the place when you start looking. So Emilio Estevez's dad, "There's no losers in this family. You got to win." He's the wrestler in The Breakfast Club, the jock, the sporto. And he feels invisible, and that's why he feels such a connection with Ally Sheedy, who, when she says her home life is unsatisfactory, one of the best lines of all time, and they ask her why, and she says, "It's because they ignore me." That's right. That's laissez-faire kind of parenting. Molly Ringwald, Claire, when she's dropped off in the BMW, and I did not plan on talking about this, but I watched this movie last night because August wanted to see it, and it's like so
– it's incredible.
When Molly Ringwald's dad drops her off in the BMW, he says, "Don't worry, like, I'll make it up to you." He's kind of the helicopter parent, that he's the one that lets, he's kind of permissive and gets her out of problems, and he's going to make this problem go away and that sort of thing. So, yeah.
And all of their relationships with the parents, every youth in that movie, like, almost hates
their
parents.
All terrible.
I mean, they're all terrible. Yeah. And that is definitely the moral of that movie.
Yes. Watch it. Don't be it.
That's at least part of it. Yeah, exactly. That's a good one.
And by the way, parents, I'll just say a word of grace. If parents have been listening to this and be like, oh my gosh, I'm a terrible parent. I'm totally the drill sergeant or I'm totally the helicopter. Well, the truth of this is everybody can be all of those things at different times. We can kind of go back and forth.
Yes.
And again, just remember, now we've given you a major tool, which is there's this other kind of parent called consultant. Because most of the time, the two models you get are either be a drill sergeant, lay down the law, be tough, you got to be the parent, or be your child's friend and kind of the helicopter style. And I think knowing that, and again, as we said before, you're not going to do this perfectly. You're going to practice. You're going to make mistakes. And you're just going to get better, hopefully, Lord willing, at being this kind of consultant parent model. So guilt and shame are not going to be good. You're not going to be your friends here. Just say, thank you, God, that I now have a new way to think about this and help me take it one day at a time.
Definitely. I think that's great to remember because shame is not the best motivator.
Don't be your own drill sergeant. You know,
absolutely. Mm-hmm. But I want to get into the first skill that we're going to talk about throughout this series. And like I said, there's 9 altogether. But the first one to use with children is to neutralize arguments. Now, I don't know if y'all know this, but children will argue with you. and as a parent, like we were talking about earlier, that our loving authority is very important with children. And if we can neutralize arguments, it helps to maintain that sort of loving authority with children. And so the point of this is that if children can argue with us, then they won't really respect us. And part of children arguing with parents or arguing with an authority figure is if they know that they can affect your weather, your personal mood, if they know that they can affect your weather, then they will negotiate for power in your house. And I mean unhealthy sorts of control. So they'll negotiate for that control in your house. And so they'll learn sort of early on, if this works, they will learn to manipulate that.
And they'll use it all the time.
They will use it all the time.
Everything will become an
argument. They know where the buttons Absolutely. To push are and they will push them.
They will do that. And so they will learn to be manipulative and it will be a resignation of your authority as a leader. And as a loving leader.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note that it is normal for kids to argue. Like, that's actually part of their development as people and how they figure out that, you know, it's how they learn about power and hopefully in a healthy way. You know, it is their job to push against boundaries. Mm-hmm. But it is then your job as a parent.
It's going to happen.
Yeah, it's your job as a parent to then lovingly let them know where those boundaries are and that limits are set. And that they are not movable and they're there for a loving reason and they are enforceable when those limits are breached.
Absolutely.
So how do you do this, Stephanie?
Well, I'm going to tell you. There are a few tips for this. And so part of what we were saying earlier is that one reason that we shouldn't really argue with children is because their little brains aren't developed yet. And so if we're trying to use rational arguments and try to do negotiations with them as if it were a business meeting, it's not really how parenting is supposed to work. And so, you know, it's not quite in that sort of way. But the first tip that Love and Logic gives is they say to go brain dead. And so they kind of advocate going very low energy, one word responses in order to kind of take out the energy or take out the steam out of this argument the child is trying to do. Because when we do more than that, it kind of gives steam to whatever they're working on.
Don't take the bait. Right?
Fuel to the fire.
Yeah, it's fueling the fire. It's you taking the bait that they're putting out.
Yeah.
And they, you know, and they'll learn that very on, that if you take the bait, they're going to keep putting it out there. Mm-hmm. Because it works.
So, yeah, and I'll say that if you go brain dead, it totally throws the kid off balance. They're like, wait, what is happening? And actually now they're kind of engaged. If it, you know, it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you've been homeschooling all day, you're about to lose your mind, or not homeschooling, but like watching your kids deal with the online education or whatever it is. And the kid says, can I have a popsicle? I know they're in the freezer, and you know that dinner's coming. You know if they have the popsicle, they're not going to be hungry for dinner, but they then will be hungry at 10 p.m. You also know they have the popsicle, they're going to have a sugar high and will be bouncing up the walls and make your life very difficult. So you can say no, and then the kid can start arguing. But if you just kind of say, huh, that's interesting.
You know, yeah, like one-liners.
Yeah.
Sort of.
You know, the less you say, the better. Because like you said, the more you respond, the more you get kind of tangled up in an unwinnable argument. Because as Tim Kreider says, children are incontinent sociopaths, and they will push the nuclear button. They will throw themselves on the floor. They have a lot of power when they've been shown that they can use it and that it works.
Absolutely.
And I just say that with this tip, it does require an incredible amount of self-awareness on your own part.
Yes.
To not take the bait. And so this is a sort of tip that taking a deep breath, being aware of your own emotions when the kid starts to argue and confront will be really helpful, so you don't just get engaged immediately and throw gasoline onto the fire.
Yeah, it can't be reactionary. And a lot of the skills we talk about will kind of encourage parents to kind of take a breath first if you find yourself being reactionary, and just remember the one-liner. It's always helpful to memorize just something that you have, kind of your go-to line. Like some of the examples that they give are, thanks for letting me know. And they say, I bet it feels that way.
Yeah, so here, let's role play here, Stephanie. I'm going to come in.
Absolutely.
Can I have a popsicle?
Not right now, actually.
But Mom, I want one. I've been working hard all day at my schoolwork, and I need one. I'm hungry.
Ugh, I know. I bet it feels that way.
But what? See, you've stymied me. See? That's how like, you've acknowledged my frustration. You're not discounting or dismissing me, you know.
Absolutely.
But you've just completely knocked me off my – because I can't – I bet it feels that way. How do I argue with that?
You can't argue with that.
This is the brilliance of it, people.
And it's sticking to your guns without having to say – you know, without having to dig your heels in with the child.
Yeah. The other – and so – yeah, you've got thanks for letting me know. I bet it feels that way.
Thanks for letting me know. I bet it feels that way. And what did you just say a minute ago? You said one as well.
The one that we always used was...
I see.
Yeah, I see.
I see what you're
enough.
Saying.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. And said compassionately, I love you too much to argue about this.
I love you too much to argue. And I've even heard some people say, I talk better when I'm not frustrated, or we can talk later when things have calmed down, or something part of this is not just to say no, but it's also to de-escalate the, you know, kind of anger or frustration that maybe the child is feeling because you said no.
Yeah.
And so I will say that this technique or this skill will... They really emphasize to not do this with sarcasm and not do it with anger or frustration, because it'll kind of backfire.
Yeah, they can
sense
it
sarcastically. Yeah. They can sense it. And so that's just that's another form of fuel. Like if you say one of these one-liners with sarcasm.
Thanks for letting me know.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
I love you too much to argue!
Essentially, you're taking the bait without taking it, you know? And so like Neil was saying, you really have to be self-aware. It's pretty... I mean, that's kind of difficult, you know?
Yeah.
We even with a toddler, you can use forms of this with younger children. Sometimes Elizabeth will throw a fit. And to be compassionate for the child in the fit and yet not give in and say, I'm sorry that you feel this way. And we'll say this, like, you must be really struggling right now, or
yeah,
you're feeling a lot of things right now. And acknowledging what the child is going through without trying to have a debate or feed the flames.
Right. And especially for, like, little kids, you know, like, Elizabeth is pretty young. And they talk about the uh-oh song. So just saying, like, uh-oh, right. You know, whenever there's something... that happens, which
deflecting their attention from the intense emotion.
Yeah.
And you've let them know that their actions are not appropriate. Like we would always say, so sad.
Right.
You know, now now it's time for you to calm down and spend some time in your room. It's so sad. And it'll be so great when you're calm and you can come back out. And again, it helps you. I almost think that the sort of uh-oh song or the so sad song is as much for the parent to remind him or her to not just start yelling, because yes. Singing sort of changes your mindset, to your point earlier, Neil, about being self-aware. It's so hard because kids they know where the buttons are. They can push them and get a reaction immediately. And before you even had time to think about it, you've reacted in a way that you don't want to react. And so having that, uh-oh, you know, when the kid throws the bowl on the floor, uh-oh.
Yeah. And
I think, go ahead.
No, I'm thinking like the thing is that you can talk to your child about certain things. Like if you really need to discuss something, that's totally fine. But the point of this specific skill is to not have that in a heated argument where people are vying for control. And so if you do need to discuss something, that's totally fine. But it needs to be done kind of in a way that people are able to listen to, you know, your child is able to listen to you in a healthy way, and they're not constantly just trying to get something out of you and trying to control your own weather.
Yeah. Because if you do get into an argument that is a power struggle, you can, I guess, win that argument because you are bigger and maybe you can be louder. And, you know, sadly, some parents will even use physical punishment. But you've lost the relationship, and in a sense, it's a battle you don't really want to win. So that's why I think it's so important, the word here, to give yourself permission as a parent to take time, to give yourself permission as a parent to think about how you want to respond to the situation, and to say to the kid, that's interesting, let me think about that. I'll let you know when I've reached a decision. That, again, it neutralizes the argument, gives you time to calm down, and I think the point about using as few words as possible is so key.
Yeah, and in that situation, your authority is never really up for debate. You're assuming that, you know, I'm the one who's making this decision, and I am going to make the one that's best for you, you know, because I love you.
Once your authority is not in question and it's not a power struggle, then you can actually have a conversation about whatever it is the child needs to talk with
you
about. And you can actually be present to listen and to consult and to help and not feel like you're fighting to try and win a battle.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I hope that skill makes sense to everyone. I want to hear your thoughts on it. But I think that this is a really good one to talk about at the beginning because I think this one can really, just by itself, this one can greatly improve the way that we communicate with children.
So tip one, go brain dead.
Tip one, go brain dead.
Tip two, calmly repeat a one-liner. Thanks for letting me know. I bet it feels that way.
Yeah, and it can be, if you have a good one that you've come up with yourself, that works too. It's just whatever it is that helps to kind of calm the situation and, you know, maintain your own weather.
And can I say a one-liner that is never appropriate is, I'll give you something to cry about.
Oof.
And we've all heard that in the grocery store.
I can second that. I've heard that.
Yeah, that is not that. That sort of minimizes the child's emotions currently. It's a threat of physical harm, and it's
fear-based.
It's fear-based, yeah. And it's actually often not enforced, kind of fortunately, but then the child learns my parents' style is just to make empty threats and I can do whatever I want. So,
yeah, that one's bad if it's enforced and if it's not enforced.
It's you know, just like bad. Both.
It's definitely a lose-lose.
Empty threats are generally not a good parenting technique.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I want to leave you with maybe a question to ponder, or two questions. And the first question is, can I maintain a day where my yes is yes and my no is no? And the second question is this, can I love my child for who they are right now and not who I want them to be in the future? And those are kind of the two, just some things to think about. And especially the first one is remembering that the child knows whenever we are people to keep our word. And that is one way that we can just keep our promises to them and maintain that healthy relationship with our child.
Who else said let your yes be yes and your no be no? It rings a bell. I can't.
Who was that?
Yeah,
I think it was Jesus, wasn't it?
I think you're right. Where did you go to seminary?
Oh, so if you have any questions for us or any comments, feel free to send us an email in our new email, which is nothomealone@stalbanswaco.org. We want to hear from you. We may even do a podcast at the very end with some questions and answers if you have any. So feel free to shoot us an email there. And do y'all have any ending thoughts for us before we head out?
We know this is tough.
It is.
Your clergy, we're here praying for you and one day at a time.
Absolutely.
And if you mess up parenting, well, then it's all your fault. No, no, no. That's the message. We just want to.
That is not obvious.
And I no. That's I'm ending sarcastically, which we just said not to do. But I'll say that you know the whole idea here of the name of this podcast, Not Home Alone, is that you are not alone in this. You know, to the extent that we can help you, we pray that that happens. But knowing ultimately that the Lord is with you and you've got the guidance of the Holy Spirit, and I think you know. Looking at how Jesus interacts with people is a pretty good way to learn about love and logic. So anyways, that's all. You're not alone is what I want to say to you.
Absolutely. And, you know, we can take a joke, so I'm not worried about it. But like what Neil was saying earlier, you know, it's really not ever too late to start this.
That's right.
And I want to encourage people in that. It's never really too late to start doing these things, to have your yes be yes and your no be no. So I want to encourage you in that. You are not home alone, and we will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.